Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Well, good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad you're here. We have an interesting program today. Normally here on Driven to Business, we spend all of our time talking about small business. We like to talk about leadership issues, about how to advertise your business, how to perhaps have people find you on Google, how to deal with employees, how to sell, all those kinds of things. But you know, all of that is only possible in this country because we're free. We have freedom to pursue business. Our guest today is very, very active in seeing that our freedoms are guaranteed. And one of the freedoms that he's very adamant about is the Second Amendment freedoms. Our guest today is Mark Walters. Mark is the host of a very popular radio program here on Salem called The Armed American Radio. And Mark, welcome to Driven to Business.
Hey, Eddie, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's a great opportunity, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I stalled giving the name of your program there because I kept wanting to say American Armed, but I knew that wasn't correct.
Yeah, well, you know, it's easy to mess up. We do it on the show, too, but I refer to the program as the Armed American Radio Network, or the Armed American Radio Show, so that's fine with me.
Well, good deal. Mark, there are a lot of business people who are not owners of firearms, and they perhaps find themselves disinterested in the ongoing gun control debate.
Right.
But I know you agree with me that it's true that the loss of any freedom affects the loss of all freedoms.
Absolutely. 100%. And, you know, the firearms industry right now, it's not, let's back up for just a second. Guns sure haven't been in the news as of late, have they?
No.
You see, we've been predicting this on Armed American Radio. What you're seeing happening right now in the firearms industry, these unprecedented attacks against our nation's firearms rights and our freedoms, are attacks against a huge percentage of our nation's economy. And I'm not sure if you or your listeners realize, I'm sure you do, but a lot of listeners probably don't realize what an economic impact the firearm industry has. So when you hear Barack Obama and the Democrats, and let me make this very clear, it is the Democrat machine that is coming after and attacking our firearms freedoms. When they do that, they are attacking the economic impact in the United States of America total, over 220,000 jobs, wages paying almost $11 billion with an overall economic impact of darn near $35 billion in this economy. And since 2010, you know, we've had one of the worst economies in our nation's history over the last 4 to 5 years. It is not improving, regardless of what they tell you, but
right,
the firearms industry is and is continuing to be the shining star in what is otherwise a very drab economic outlook.
You know, I am, Mark, I am a firearm owner. I'm certainly not an expert like you are in that situation, but I was with my son-in-law a few months ago up in South Carolina, actually, and we stopped by a very locally owned gun shop up there to get some ammunition, and as I was absolutely astonished at how many people you could barely move in that store.
It's like that every day, and it's like that being reported by gun shop owners across the country, regardless of what pocket they happen to be located in America. It is really, really something. Of course, I'm north of Atlanta just a little bit. As you know, I broadcast from the Atlanta, Georgia studios of WGKA Talk 920. And I frequent a number of local gun shops around the area, and it just blows my mind to watch the growth that these companies, these small mom-and-pop businesses, are experiencing since the second Obama term. And going back to what I had mentioned previous, you know, I had been predicting this since the first Obama term, that a second Obama administration would be a just terrible for gun owners. And that has, in fact, happened. And those unprecedented attacks against our gun rights are what, in fact, is helping to explode the firearms industry. You know, I think every gun shop owner in the country has got a picture of Obama in his office wall. This guy's the best gun salesman in the history of the United States.
I do hear that, and you're right. You do see that. You know, I always get so, I guess, amused, or when I go in a gun shop like the one up there that I was telling you about. We go in there, And they had some great people behind the counter that, you know, you can talk to. They're very knowledgeable. I was telling them what I was looking to do with the cartridges I was buying. And they said, well, then you should get this kind because of this, that, and the other. Very, very expert in a lot more than me and talking about it. But I also get tickled. All of them, including the men and women, are all packing, as you might expect, are packing firearms on their belts. And I was telling my son-in-law, I said, you know, anyone that would come in here to rob this place would just have to be a complete idiot. I mean, because
it doesn't happen. I think of locally, there was a firearms retailer up in Pickens County, Georgia, that was robbed a couple of years back. The individuals were eventually caught. But, of course, that robbery occurred in the middle of the night, sometime about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when the business was closed. It was a smash-and-grab type thing. And again, those perpetrators were eventually caught. But that's really the only effective way you're going to rob a gun shop, because every gun shop owner and every employee in that store is, in fact, carrying a firearm. And that speaks to our right to keep and bear arms and the deterrent effect that guns are. Getting off the subject a little bit, but that's the deterrent effect that we all know guns to be, and that's why we call a good guy with a gun whenever there's a bad guy with a gun.
Exactly. It's not only the thing my son-in-law and I were talking about. It's not only the gun shop owners that were packing heat. I would expect a great many of the people in the store as customers were also doing it. So you'd be in double trouble if you happened to, if you went in there and tried anything. You'd have a lot of people.
It would be a foolish move. I've attended every NRA convention over the years for the last several years, and I don't think you're going to see anybody walk in and try to commit an armed robbery against any attendee at the NRA convention, for example.
Exactly.
It just doesn't. It would be foolish to do so. But again, that speaks to the deterrent effect of guns, and we've actually lost in this country on the pro-gun side of what the left likes to call the debate. The debate over the firearms freedoms in this country ended 222 years ago, almost 223 years ago, December 19th, 1791. That debate ended. They like to keep the debate alive. Those of us on this side of the equation are the ones that really come from common sense. But we've allowed the language to be hijacked.
Right.
The term common sense has been hijacked. You hear common sense gun control measures. Okay, common sense gun control measures to the left and the Democrats means take away your guns or put a law into place that's going to eventually allow them to confiscate your guns, because their ultimate goal cannot be attained unless they take away your firearms. Otherwise, it's all for naught. So it's all based on one big lie. And what this side of the debate, the pro-gun side of the debate, needs to do is come back in and take back that language that's been hijacked. And that's part of what makes Armed American Radio so successful, is we're doing that.
Exactly. Mark, why do you think, why is the anti-gun crowd so passionate about stripping Americans of the right to bear arms? What drives them?
That's a question we've asked. That's a question for the ages. It is quite astonishing when you look at some of the arguments on their side of the fence, which can be debunked every time with facts. They like to feel. We, on the other hand, like to think. We know that every time there's a bad guy with a gun, we call a good guy with a gun. Of course, common sense tells us that's why police officers have firearms.
Right.
Okay. To answer the bigger question, it's about power. And I hate to use bumper sticker logic, but gun control isn't about guns.
I agree
with
that.
It's about power, and it's about control. And the left's ultimate agenda, and ladies and gentlemen, my gosh, if you don't see what is happening with the Obama administration in the bigger picture, you'll never understand what it is I'm explaining to you now. But you have to look at the bigger picture. These incredible power grabs, this attempt to control every aspect of your life during the Obama, very dangerous second term, Obama second term, and we're witnessing it right now with Obamacare. Do you think Obamacare is about giving 30 million people insurance? No, it's about controlling your life and virtually every aspect of it. And that's what gun control is about. By instituting gun control, if they're effective in confiscating your weapons, they wield absolute power over the people, when in reality, it's our right to stay armed that has kept this country free for over 200-plus years.
There are people who would consider themselves at least to be fair-minded, and I think maybe you mentioned this earlier, because we have sort of allowed the language to be diluted, like common sense.
Right.
gun control who are not they don't see themselves as power hungry grabbers. They just sort of buy into the idea, well, you know, there ought to be more controls. You just can't let everybody run around with a gun. I mean, there ought to be.
Those are suckers. We call them what they are on Armed American Radio. Those are suckers. And there is a certain element of, you know, there will always be suckers out there. Listen, this administration depends on stupidity to attain and push its agenda. It requires a certain level of sucker out there in order to be successful. And what we're doing is we're educating people every single day on Armed American Radio and programs like it and the ones that are out there anyway, to wake up, if you will, Eddie, to wake up. You know, listen, you've got, there's a big difference between a liberal and a conservative. Again, bumper sticker logic, but it's so true. Liberals like to feel, conservatives think.
Yep.
And you can get into an argument with a liberal gun hater, and at the end of the conversation, it's them that will be confounded, not you, because you have facts on your side.
You know, as I'd said in the opening of the program, there is a parallel between this and over-regulation and over, I can't think of a word to use, but over, where businesses are basically handicapped and handcuffed by regulations, and then that sort of sold to people by the idea, well, you know, businesses would be cheating everybody if we didn't have all these rules. But, you know, Mark, I hang around with the business guys. I've known them all my life. And there are certainly bad apples in the mix, but by and large, business guys are not out to cheat people. They're decent people. They do the right thing. And when you add a bunch of burdensome regulations to them, where that they're having to raise prices just to comply with the new regulations, well, the people that ultimately get done by that are the consumers.
You know, the firearm industry is the most heavily regulated and burdened industry in the nation. I think maybe a very close second, if any, to the tobacco industry, maybe.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the firearm industry and those involved in the firearm industry are heavily burdened and heavily taxed by the federal government. It is not gun shop owners, a little bit different. Of course, they have to comply more with the ATF
right.
regulation. But when you're talking about manufacturing, when you're talking about federal taxes, excise taxes, and so forth, you're talking about ammunition manufacturers and the actual, you know, Glock, Smyrna, Georgia-based, here in the United States anyway, Austria-based, globally.
Which I think a lot of people are not aware that actually they are here in town. Hey, we got to go to a break, Mark, if you can hang around. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We are streaming live on biz1190.com. This program will also be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. So go there and check us out. Our guest today is Mark Walters. Mark is the host of Armed American Radio Network. And Mark, we're glad you're here. Mark,
thank
is
you.
Gun ownership increasing in the United States?
It's at all-time highs. It's at record highs. And interesting. You know, you can break down gun ownership in America into several different segments. You have curio relic collectors, those
right.
who collect historic pieces. You have hunters, and you have those who are interested in self-defense. And then you have, of course, the concealed carry aspect of firearms. And of those four segments that I would break gun ownership into, it is the concealed carry segment that is exploding across the country, the fastest growing segment of gun ownership, number one. And inside that little sub-segment of that concealed carry is women. Women are now the fastest growing purchasing segment of concealed carry weaponry across the country. The Second Amendment ain't about hunting, folks. I hate to disappoint some of
exactly.
you. But the Second Amendment is about your right to defend your life and defend yourself and your nation from a tyrannical government written by men who fought a tyrannical government.
Mark, you actually had the experience of fighting off a carjacker by using a handgun yourself. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was. You know, I owned a business for. It's a different story. A fun one though. But I was in the trucking business for many years after I graduated college back in 1984, and I started my own business back in 1994, about 10 years after I got out of college. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, how does a guy go from running a truckload brokerage company, a successful small business down in Tampa, Florida, to hosting a nationally syndicated and growing radio broadcast
right.
about the right to keep and bear arms with two books and so forth, and writing a column called One to the Head for Concealed Carry Magazine? It seems like a pretty big jump there. But it's really not. I had been a gun owner most of my adult life, and I was in sales for a lot of these trucking companies, and I probably don't have to tell you, but a lot of places you frequent with big trucks aren't on the best side of the tracks
right.
in most major cities across the country. And I worked in areas like Philadelphia for a couple years. I worked in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I worked in Richmond, Virginia, later down in Tampa, Florida. Everybody says, well, Tampa, you have some very bad areas on the main streets of Tampa, Florida. And I found that out on my way to work one morning when my daughter was about 2 weeks old. That opened my eyes more than anything else to my ability to want to be able to defend and protect my family when I had my daughter. And I was on my way to work. It was about 6:20 in the morning, and I had to cross through a bad area of Tampa known as Suitcase City. Anytime you name an area of town like that, you know it's not good. And I was actually driving to work, you know, on a November 18th, 2002, about 6:20 in the morning, when I happened up on the traffic light of East Fletcher Avenue and Nebraska Avenue. Anybody who's familiar with downtown Tampa will know the area. When I witnessed a SUV dart across from a stopped position in the right lane just before the traffic light, turned and cut into traffic perpendicular to me, and I was in the left lane. There was a left turn lane and a right lane. I was in the center when the car pulled up and stopped traffic as we were all approaching the traffic light. I've just missed hitting the driver's side door. When two individuals got out of the car, turned their attention to the car off of my front left bumper, which was a Toyota Camry. I'll never forget it. And the guy was wrapping his hand. The driver who exited the vehicle pointed at me and mouthed some not-so-nice words I can't repeat. If we were on satellite, I could. And he wrapped his hand in a what appeared to be a white T-shirt, pointed at me, and then proceeded with his partner to try to break into the Toyota Camry. And I had a lawfully carried Glock 36, which is a subcompact 45 caliber Glock, on my hip that day. And I pulled it out of its holster. Within seconds, they turned their attention toward me. When the guy couldn't pound the window in the Camry, he turned his attention toward me, and I leveled my gun over the steering wheel, rested both my arms on the steering wheel with the muzzle up against the glass of the cold glass of that morning windshield, and ended that attempt instantly without having to fire a shot. And I became one of, I would later find out, one of the 2.5 million estimated by Gary Klecht, famed researcher down at the University of Florida, one of the estimated 2.5 million people every year who use a firearm to defend themselves against criminal attack in this country, with better than 95% of those people never having to pull the trigger. The light turned green, people went on their way, and it was the most surreal experience I'd ever experienced in my life. And it changed me permanently, even though I never had to exit my vehicle and I never had to pull the trigger of my firearm. And I rededicated myself to that day. And I used to say that a criminal had a 50-50 shot of running into an armed victim if they ever picked on me on any given day up to that point. Well, that's now 100%.
Right.
Because I had made the decision afterwards. You see, prior to that incident, I had not made the decision to live an armed lifestyle, if you will, or carry my firearm with me everywhere I went. That's changed since then. And that, of course, then led to a column about that story a couple years later in Concealed Carry Magazine, which I've been writing for 10 years, and that subsequently turned into, several years down the road, bringing the magazine, if you will, to the airwaves. That exploded across the country. A couple books afterwards, Lessons from Armed America in 2009 and Lessons from Unarmed America just this past year in August of 2013. That's how we got where we are today, pretty much in a nutshell.
Now, that's an amazing story. Mark, you know, I know you're aware of this, and I can imagine what you had to say to it, but, you know, one of the stories that circulates is that, against people carrying firearms, is that a firearm is very likely to be taken away and used against the person carrying the firearm. What do you say to that?
Well, little green aliens may come down one day, too. we could set up hypothetical situations about anything you'd like to talk about. That's not born in fact. And they'll tell you, well, there are surveys that show you this, and there are surveys that show you that. Let me give you the surveys that matter. this is a country of 325-plus million people. It is estimated, and these are fairly solid numbers, because we, although we don't have a form of national registration, which is what the left is trying to do, and came very close this year earlier after Newtown in the Senate,
right,
but didn't pass it, because that would what that is a scheme to find out where every gun owner is so that they know where to come and get them at some point in time. That we all know that from history. But getting back on track, we know that there are an estimated 100-plus million gun owners in America. I would submit to you that that number, excuse me, is low, and I'll tell you why. Because I would be willing to bet money if you got an anonymous phone call while you were eating dinner one night at, say, 6:15 p.m., and somebody said, "Hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm with the Liberal Think Tank Institute, and I would like to know whether you own a gun." You'd probably hang up on them without answering them. Or if it were me, you're going to get a piece of my mind before I hang up on them. So, we have to base these numbers on what we know. The background checks come in on what's called the 4473 form. And I would venture to say that gun ownership is probably better than half of Americans. You're probably looking at about 125 to 150 million gun owners. It would be a fairly safe estimate.
You mentioned earlier about the women being a rapidly growing part of that gun owner. You know, I was thinking after you said that, of all the people that I know that have recently gotten concealed carry permits, I think all but one of them is a woman. I mean, that is the big deal now.
It is the big deal. And when you look at that sizable number of 100-plus million, and let's use the number of 100 million gun owners across this country, when you look at 100 million gun owners, that's a significantly large number. That's this, we're talking about over 100-plus million people. And in the scheme of mathematics, a very small percentage of those gun owners have concealed carry permits. But that number is rapidly growing, because we just saw the 50th state in the nation, Illinois, gun-hating Illinois, adopted home of Barack Hussein Obama, who is now forced by the courts via the 2010 McDonald decision, won by famed attorney Alan Gura and his supporters at the Second Amendment Foundation, overturning Chicago's 30 or 40-year gun ban, now has, come January 1st, a new concealed carry permit law in place. Illinois residents will now join the rest of America, 50th state, all 50 states. But you see, you don't hear this in the media. And where I'm going with this is, whatever estimate you look at, if you look at the left, who tries to debunk the Gary Kleck study from the 90s in Florida,
right,
telling us 2.5 million defensive gun uses a year, they find, on the low end, 180,000. On the high end, 2.5 million. Clinton's Justice Department found about 850,000 defensive gun uses per
year. Let me come back to you after the break. We're bailing out here. This is Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We have guest Mark Walters today, the host of Armed American Radio Network, and we're glad he's here. Fascinating discussion. Mark, before I had to kind of rudely cut you off before the break there, you were talking about how that the number of gun owners in the United States is actually probably larger than is advertised.
Yeah, it is. There's no question about it. It's the numbers that you see in the mainstream media. If you see anything in the mainstream media at all that's positive about gun ownership, you tend not to. But those numbers would be skewed on the low end, and when in reality it's about 100-plus million, and I would put that number, in my own estimate, probably at around 125 to 150 million, would not surprise me. But before the break, we were talking about the number of defensive gun uses in our community. We refer to it as DGUs. Gary Kleck found 2.5 million. If you divide 2.5 million by 365 days, you come up with a number around 5,000 in that range.
Wow.
Clinton Justice Department tried to debunk that number. They came up with 800-plus thousand. That number came up to about 2,300 defensive gun uses per day. That was the Clinton Justice Department, the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Statistics. On the low end, the Obama administration found 185,000 in their reports per year. That's 493 defensive gun uses per day on the low end by the left that hate your rights. So the fact is indisputable. Guns in the hands of good law-abiding people save more lives in this country every single day than are used by criminals to commit crime. But that doesn't fit the agenda. So it doesn't make the news. Every once in a while, you hear it from John Lott on Fox News, but you don't hear it on the Today Show.
Right.
You don't hear it on Good Morning America, and you certainly don't hear it on MSDNC. You don't hear it unless you're looking for it. But people are hungry for the truth, and that's why Armed American Radio has gone from a one-hour broadcast in Atlanta to hundreds of cities and hundreds of stations across the country and one of the fastest-growing shows in the nation. People are hungry for the facts, and they get the facts.
You know, you're a unique program. I was actually talking with one of the sales guys here at Salem about this earlier. You know, a lot of programs that tend to cover the topics you cover them, they primarily are they're hunting programs or something, and they sort of just cover that as a side issue.
Right.
But you know, you're in your program that you're right down the middle with the Second Amendment rights and the facts about gun ownership and an adamant defender of those rights. And I appreciate you doing it.
We knew when the program first started that we knew about this culture. We knew 100+ million Americans were firearm owners, probably more, half of us. And like I said, it's probably more than that. Many people don't like to admit they have a gun.
Right.
But that's half of this country, and people are adamant about their firearms rights. You know, I say the Democrats are coming after your guns, and they are. And people like to say, even the NRA will say, well, even though it's a Democrat-controlled Senate, it's still a majority pro-gun. Okay, we could mince words there. They're playing semantics with that. The fact is, those Democrats are playing politics. They're not really pro-gun. They just know if they come out and say they're anti-gun, they're not going to have a job. So they're playing politics with our rights and our freedoms, and we're grateful for that because they're right. They wouldn't have a job. So I'd like to offer every Democrat listening to this program that's running for office in 2014, do us all a favor. Run on Obamacare. You own it, and throw a little gun control support in the mix, and let's see how far it gets you in 14.
What do you say?
Not very.
What do you say to people that I mean, there are people, you know, and I know you, as a firearms expert, you know, there are people with small children in the home and things of that sort, and the mom and dad are firearm owners, and they arm themselves, and you know, and I realize there's a lot of baloney gets spread on this too, but the issue of safety does come up. What do you say to that?
Well,
what advice do you give? I guess,
and we're a huge proponent of that safety on Armed American Radio. And again, this is something that the mainstream media likes to go after. It's, you know, the NRA and the gun nuts and all. You know what? It's the gun nuts and the NRA that train more people in gun safety every day across this country. Show me one class the Brady campaign offers about gun safety. They don't. Show me one class the loudmouths at the violence policy offer about gun safety, and they're supposed to be the gun safety groups, according to the media. They don't. The NRA trains tens of millions of children, teachers, law enforcement, military, your neighbors, every single year in this country on gun safety.
You know, Mark, when I was a kid growing up in rural Alabama,
you lived in L.A., huh?
Yes, L.A., that's exactly right. We had, you know, it wasn't uncommon. We were around, now, honestly, it was mostly shotguns, and, you know, what I knew about firearms was a 20-gauge, a 12-gauge, and a 410. That's sort of what I knew about, and you know, the various kinds of shotguns there were. But you know, that culture sort of taught us early on, we were very, very careful with firearms, because you're older uncles or your parents or somebody would smack your ears if you weren't. Like, you know, I as a young boy, I knew what to do with a shotgun when I'm climbing through a fence. I knew I knew all about how to not point guns at people. You know, it was part of the culture. We just knew that coming up.
Well, you raised a fascinating conversation that, you know, this is why Armed American Radio could go 3, 4, 5 days a week for 3 hours at a pop, if not longer. People said, well, can you really talk about guns? Oh, my gosh. Well, we don't scratch the surface. Every time the show closes, we could have continued to go on and on and on. And it's for that reason. Talking about safety and guns, we can't overstate this enough. Children have a natural curiosity about firearms.
Right.
This is a country founded on the gun, born on the gun, raised on the gun, protected by the gun. Guns aren't going away. You can be a wishy-washy, you know, feel good. What's wrong with everybody having health care liberal all day long? I don't like guns all day long. But you have to wake up to the fact that there are hundreds of millions of guns in this country, and they aren't going away. So you better wake up to that fact. And I'll give you an example. I have a neighbor down the street. I have a 9-year-old boy and an 11-year-old little girl. Both my kids knew how to reassemble my Glocks when they were about 3.5, 4 years old. They couldn't take them apart because their hands weren't strong enough, but they could reassemble them when they were 3.5, 4, 5 years old. They play with neighbor kids around the street, and one of the neighbors said to me one day, he happens to be from L.A. as well, Lower Alabama, Roger, and he says to me, hey, man, he says, I've been thinking about getting me a gun. And I said, well, when you do, let me know. I'd love to teach you a little bit of safety before you go out to the range. Let me give you some classes and some training material that I have here at the house. And he said, yeah, that'd be good, he says, because I don't have one. And I said, do you teach your kids gun safety? He said, well, like I just said, Mark, he said, I don't have any guns in the house, so it's really not necessary for me to do that. I could have choked him.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point.
I said, Roger, you know, when your kids are over here a lot, he said, oh, I know, they love going over. I said, I have 70 guns in my house. They go to Bill and Terry's house. Bill and Terry have guns in their home. They go to Bob and Becky's house. Bob and Becky have guns in their homes. And if they don't, the odds are they do. You don't know that. You've got to teach your children. My gosh, don't you want me to teach my kids gun safety? You see, my kids aren't going to be the kids that are going to find my revolver and show it to their kids, to their friends.
Right.
Bob and Becky's might. And your kids better know the four rules that the NRA teaches in their Eddie Eagle program every single day to millions of kids across this country. Stop. Don't touch. Leave the area. Tell an adult. I go one step farther. If there's no adult there, call 911. This is where safety starts. It starts with the mother and the father in teaching and instilling gun safety and safe practices to children. And only you as a parent know when your child is mature enough to be taught gun safety and to be able to be taught how to shoot. And the best thing that you can do with kids if you have guns in the house is take them out and show them how those firearms work. Teach them the respect and the power of that weapon and strip them of that natural curiosity they have. And those of you who are thinking, oh, my God, it's your families that cause problems.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It would be kids that were never around guns. They would see one laying around, pick it up, and say, what's this do? And start messing around. And
they witness tens of thousands of murder on television every year, whether
right.
you like it or not.
Yep.
It's imperative that we teach our children gun safety. Guns aren't going anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. They're here to stay. Nobody's going to take them away from anybody. It isn't going to happen.
So, Mark, there is a lot of debate and discussion about the Second Amendment and about its implementation. But as an expert and someone that sort of lives in this world, tell us because I think a lot of people do not know what it actually says. What does it actually say?
Well, the Second Amendment, if you want to go back to the original term in the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It means what it says. It doesn't mean what they say it says. It means what it says.
And you mentioned earlier, this has nothing to do with hunting. It never had anything
to do with
hunting.
Hunting is not part of the Second Amendment. You know, you can go back to the Federalist Papers. This is a topic that we just simply do not have enough time to discuss. But we could go back to the Federalist Papers. There were those who were debating the Constitution, several hundred years ago, who guns were so common and carried by everyone that wasn't even thought of to put it in.
Right.
It was just a part. It was like food. People carried a firearm. It's just the way life was. And people know, and they knew then, and then you have a natural instinct, and it was recognized then, to defend and protect your life. It wasn't something that even had to be talked about. So they put it in various terms, and, you know, it was rewritten a couple of times. Thomas Jefferson had a couple different versions of it. And back then they did something that we can't do today. They actually debated.
Right.
You know, sides came together and they talked, and even though one side didn't like everything about it and the other side didn't like everything about it, they actually talked about it and they came up with the Second Amendment the way it is written today.
Right. You know, I think even people that are generally supportive of the Second Amendment get sucked into these arguments, because I've heard, Mark, I've heard people that support the Second Amendment put it in terms of hunting and say, you know, next thing you know, you'll be taking my, you know, I like hunting, my kids grew up hunting. Of course,
supporters of the Second Amendment. I hate to disappoint you. The Second Amendment doesn't have a but in it. How many times have you heard this? I support the Second Amendment, but I believe in reasonable regulation.
Right.
What reasonable regulation? If you're coming from the, you know, this is the argument that Dianne Feinstein uses to trick the stupid among us into believing that she cares about your Second Amendment rights. Dianne Feinstein came flat out and said, if I could have Mr. and Mrs. America with 51 votes, taken them all, go pick them up, I would have.
Yep.
That's what she said.
Yep.
She hasn't changed her mind. She's been coached by the upper echelons and the elitists in the Democratic Party to go into stealth mode and wait. These people will wait decades. They're doing it right now.
I think that's one of the real benefits that you and your radio program do, Mark, is to educate a lot of people, because I really do think there are well-intentioned people that just have not been part of the argument. They don't get it. They don't really know what's at stake. They don't. They're not really for anyone taking all the guns, but they don't really see behind the scenes of what's going on. There, you are listening to Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. Where does the time go? Well, it goes very quickly when you have a great guest like Mark Walters with us. Mark, I'm glad you're here. Mark, let's talk for a few minutes about a little more about the business of firearms. And my particular interest is small business. And we mentioned this already. Gun shops are a viable business in some ways, just like any other business, aren't they?
They're no different than anybody else. They're just very heavily regulated.
And you know, I think I mentioned to you earlier, when I'm in there, the ones that I go in that are good, and I'm sure there are bad ones, like there are bad everything else.
Of course there are. Look, I want to stop you there for that's true. And the left likes, the gun haters and the freedom haters like to pounce on that. And I like to remind them and retort with this. You know what? There are bad judges who are sitting in prison. There are bad doctors who gave bad prescriptions to evil people to buy drugs,
right,
sitting in prison. There are drug addicts. There are bad lawyers. There are bad doctors. There are bad Indian chiefs. We can't legislate people's actions. Guess what? Evil exists in this world. And we can't, as much as all those people who say, what's wrong with everybody having health care? Those are the people who think we can put a sign up that says no guns allowed at Jared's.
Right.
Well, guess what? The criminal doesn't pay attention to that sign.
That's, you know, I do get tickled. That some people, it's like you put a sign up outside your store that says no robbing here. Well, I mean,
listen, if this was effective, again, they hijack common sense is one of the terms that they've hijacked. Common sense regulations. Is it common sense to put a sign up that says this is a gun-free zone? No. Common sense says, this is not a gun-free zone. Any attempt to harm our children will be met with deadly force. That's common sense. You see, we've lost that because of political correctness in this country.
You know, I'm sure you've seen it. It's sort of a joke. And you see these occasionally signs on the Internet. Somebody will put up and say, you know, my home's protected by Smith and Wesson, but my neighbor's a liberal.
Yeah, you know.
Go over to his house.
I've got a lot. I've got people said it. I've got a sign, a yard sign that, sitting up on my wall that says, trust me, nothing inside's worth dying for, and it's pictures of bullet holes in a Target. You know, I mean, there are people who put that stuff up. But taking the kidding out of it aside, there's truth to that. That's why we find it humorous, because it is truthful. Listen, there studies have been done for years and years and years. One of the definitive studies, and I apologize, the name of the study escapes me, was done in the late 80s. And it was so definitive, they haven't even bothered to redo it because it's so true. And that is when I believe I think it was just under 10,000 convicted burglars, armed robbers, and felons in prison were asked whether or not they feared homeowners and gun owners and so forth. The response was better than 90%.
Of course,
felons and burglars and convicted criminals sitting in prisons across the country today will tell you they fear an armed homeowner more than they fear the police, because they know an armed homeowner will kill them.
Right.
Which is why they try not to break into homes where the people are home, or otherwise what we refer to as a hot burglary, or as we know them today as a hot home invasion, when the resident is there. Because we read these blurbs every day. So-and-so shot the home invader, and the home invader was killed. Criminals aren't stupid. They case their joints. They plan their crimes. They may be stupid in the way we look at stupid because of what they do for a living. But they think about what they're doing. They plan it in advance. They want to get out. They're cowards. They don't want to get hurt. Right. They fear you with a gun more than they fear the police because they know the police have rules and regulations.
Mark, here in, let's say here in Georgia, and a person does have to use a firearm and actually pull the trigger to defend themselves. What in today's environment, what's going to happen to you in terms of the justice system? How's that going to work?
Well, yeah, people are now like to talk about the George Zimmerman case and the Stand Your Ground. Great attorney for GeorgiaCarry.org, John Monroe, is a frequent guest on my show, and I'm blessed to have him here locally. He'll come into the Talk 920 studios and talk about this subject on a national level. We hear a lot about Stand Your Ground. Georgia has had Stand Your Ground for over 160 years here in the state. Stand Your Ground has been in common law in Georgia for years and years. You have a right to defend your life where you happen to be. It's basic human, it's your human right to life. What Stand Your Ground did was codified it in written law. Instead of common law that we all knew, Stand Your Ground said, okay, let's write this into law and take the ambiguity out of it. That's all Stand Your Ground did. Even if the Stand Your Ground haters were successful in overturning Stand Your Ground in Georgia, and have no fear, they won't be, but if they were, nothing would change. Your right to defend your life in the state of Georgia predates them writing it into a book. We have a right to life in this state, and we have a right to life in this nation, and all of us have a right to life. In fact, you have a basic human instinct called fight or flight.
Right.
When your life, it's your human instinct to defend your life before you die and use every tool and means at your disposal to defend that life. So
I think a lot of this discussion on rights goes back to the initial premise in the Declaration of Independence is that the government doesn't grant us rights. It's their job to protect them. Our rights come from God.
It recognizes them, and that's what the Constitution does in the Second Amendment. But, you know, you go back to the business. It's so easy to get off track. We're talking about Georgia businesses. According to the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and these numbers you can take to the bank, there are 4,078 jobs firearm industry related here in the state of Georgia, paying a total of just under $200 million in wages.
Wow.
With an output of $500 million and an average salary in this state of $45,227, paying over almost $9 billion in federal taxes. That's just Georgia.
Right. Speaking of going into gun shops and business, I was going to get your, I think I already know what you're going to say here, but just to give you an opportunity to perhaps say it. Tell us about the recent ammunition shortages and what's behind that?
Well, you know, a lot of conspiracy theory about that. I don't buy into that. There are legitimate questions as to why the federal government is buying hundreds of billions of rounds of ammunition. There's no question about Homeland Security. We read about, you know, Social Security Administration buying, you know, 100 million rounds of ammunition of hollow point. That's a legitimate question. But these federal agencies train, and they use, you know, I go to a range in a training, in a two-day Rob Pincus combat focus shooting class, I'll go through 1,300 rounds myself. So, you know, when you consider the massive amount of ammunition needs that the federal government has and law enforcement across all spectrums. But I will tell you this, the conspiracy theorists are up in arms right now because the Homeland Security is in the process of procuring more rounds than were fired from in every war from World War II on.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'll let you guys, you know, play with that if you want to. I don't see the conspiracy there.
But you know, when it was sort of astonishing to me. And again, I don't buy anywhere near the amount of ammunition you do, but I do buy some ammunition. And when you go into a store and there literally is no 9mm on the shelf.
Well, people tend to correlate that. That's why the conspiracy theorists jumped up. What that really had to do with, and I talk with people in the industry and to manufacturers, what that was is there's a shortage of components. And you have in this country, as we've all witnessed, particularly over the last 6 years since the first election of Barack Obama.
Got 1 minute here, Mark.
Okay. Since that first election, Barack Obama has created, through these fears of gun control, this massive uptick. You have guys like me who are buying a lot of ammunition, who shoot a lot. You have, you know, you've got the preppers out there that are buying more than they ever need. Then you've got an influx of millions of new shooters who are buying ammunition. It is the basic laws of supply and demand. It is stressing the country's ammunition, civilian ammunition supply. But that supply is coming back. As we talk today, you can buy ammunition by the case. It's back. The supply is catching up with
it. Well, I'm actually glad to hear you say that. I guess it makes me, it just backs up what you've already told us about the increasing numbers of gun owners. Mark, you've been a fantastic and interesting guest. Thank you so much for coming on Driven to Business.
It. Thanks much for having me on.
You have been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every week on WAFS Biz 1190, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.